welcome to the Lisa Fisher Said podcast. I'm Lisa Fisher, a longtime broadcaster and journalist, and now a health coach based in Arkansas who's been in front of a microphone or a camera since the 1980s. I think of myself as the queen of Arkansas media. I started this podcast in 2020 to help you live a better life. In fact, I hope this podcast is the most informative 45 minutes of your week. For this episode, we've got two parts in one, and they're both dealing with moms of type 1 diabetics. The first one is Breezy Osborne Wingfield, who has Riley. And then part two, Tanya Mead has two children with type 1 diabetes. Breezy is up first. Like you, I sometimes have a conundrum on what to fix, what to cook, what to prepare. Whether you're like me, an intermittent faster, and you kind of, you know, limit the amount of hours in the day you eat, or if you're grazing all day, it doesn't matter to me, you got to eat. RalstonFamilyFarms.com can help. Well, in two ways. One, because of the products you can get. You can buy the rice there. You can find a store that's near you that sells Ralston Family Farms. Tons do, people, tons. But it's where I get my inspo are the recipes. So if you go to RalstonFamilyFarms.com, you click on the recipes link, and you'll get to see the different options and Instant Pot cooking instructions for those of you with the Instant Pot. I'm kind of crazy about this fajita fiesta made with the purple rice, which is one of my favorites. The kimchi fried rice. I'm all about the kimchi right now because of what it does for your gut health. Made with the golden rice. In fact, I made this recipe recently. Golden rice, 15 minutes. Actually, I made it the day before in the rice cooker because that was a tip from a friend of mine who knows Korean cooking. And I made it the next day with the Ralston Family Farms golden rice and the fried rice. I had some fried eggs with it. We had some meat and vegetables. I mean, chef's kiss on this, people. Find out more by going to their website, RalstonFamilyFarms.com. You know, I've been telling you about David's Burgers here in Central Arkansas, 10 locations. These are the folks that have been in the burger flipping business for a long time. And they brought their wares here to Little Rock about really more than 10 years ago. And they sell the best beef. I mean, the best food, the best product. They're closed on Sunday so you can worship with your family. They give to charitable organizations that are promoting family, including the adoption agencies and foster care, because they have been foster care parents themselves, the Bubbises. But let me tell you about the product. They use only grade A choice chuck beef that they purchase in large slabs. The meat is fresh, never frozen. You can tell. They butcher the slabs themselves at the local commissary into the steaks, like the ones that you can see on their website. And if you've ever been on their Instagram, and I don't know why you haven't, you need to see that they have this great value of you can go in and purchase the beef and a really good price. So the $140 value you can get for $119.95 includes things like stew meat, chuck roast, shoulder roast, ground chuck, 6 pounds of ground chuck, people, the T-bones, the bone and rib eyes. Those are just some of the things you can get. Now that may change, you know, different products, but the same, you'll get the same good value in that. But that's what you get at David's Burgers. Find out more by going to their website and their social media, davidsburgers.com.
She won most talkative in high school, and she has been running her mouth ever since. Welcome to the Lisa Fisher Said podcast with your host, Lisa Fisher.
Okay, a familiar face and voice to me, but, you know, introducing you to my audience, Breezy. You're now known as the one, the type 1 T1D mom. Isn't that what it is in the social media space? You're a T1D mom or warrior. Tell me what that was like when little Riley with the dimples and the strawberry blonde hair, when you got the diagnosis that she had type 1 diabetes.
That day is forever ingrained in all of our brains and our body. August 21st, 2018. I can tell you exactly what she was wearing, what we were doing. There had been about a month or so of just really strange going on. And we honestly thought that it had something to do with anxiety. We had no idea that type 1 was even on the radar. And as soon as we made an appointment with our amazing pediatrician, we walked in the door and the symptoms were listed and she just knew.
Wow.
And yeah, so a prick of the finger, a urine sample, and it was incredible. It was a miracle that she was not in diabetic ketoacidosis, DK.
No.
And that day, it's a blur, but I can still remember all of it. You know, you want to keep a certain face for your child because you don't want to scare them, because you can see all you think you can see into the future about what this is going to be. But you really, honestly, we were all on a new train. We were not familiar with type 1 at all. So as soon as we were diagnosed, we had to go straight to children's. They didn't know what kind of shape she was going to be in, needed to immediately get looked at, get her blood sugars under control.
Now, was she hospitalized? Because back in the day, they got hospitalized immediately for 2 weeks. Do they still do that? To educate?
She was to educate. She was, I believe, 3 days.
Okay.
That was pretty much the minimum, because she responded really well to the insulin. She did not have anything else going on miraculously. It's not always that case. But I will tell you, those 3 days there, you know, you do the diabetes education with the parents, but Riley had just turned 6 in July. Just very fresh, very young. You know, I remind her that even, you know, she's almost 12 now, and it's like, your brain, you were only on this earth for 6 years, and now you're having to understand what you've got to put needles in your body. You've got to extract blood. But I can tell you something, her math skills are amazing.
That would have to be, because at this point, and we're going to explain to people what the math you both have to do every day to manage a lifelong disease.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's not like type 2 diabetes. Type 2 diabetes is reversible and it's lifestyle. Type 1 diabetes has no fault of her own. Her pancreas, just for some reason, and her sweet little beta cells just quit working, right? Isn't that just an oversimplification?
Yes. You know, we can hypothesize, and we do as a family, you know, how it might have come from. It could come from our lineage. It could have been from anything else. You know, my dad was type 2. And so I have this experience with insulin, needles, and diabetic care, but they are two totally different worlds. I mean, absolutely totally different worlds. And so her learning how to take care of herself at such a young age, you know, Tristan and I, we pretty much function as her pancreas to try to predict, which, I mean, if you can say that in front of a type 1, they roll their eyes because you can't predict. My favorite thing is you can take 2 + 2 every single day and it will never equal 4. Now, sometimes it will, but the body it's going to react so differently. Her blood sugars, it could be the weather. It could be emotion.
Wow.
If she's in an argument.
Wait, she's 12 years old. So that means she's about to be, I do not want you to tell her personal life, but she's about to start menstruating and having hormonal issues unlike anything else.
That's been in the works. So,
okay.
That's been in.
And doesn't that affect it?
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Yeah.
She wears an insulin pump now. So a lot of times we will change an insulin pump and think her blood sugars are so high. Maybe it's the pump malfunctioning, and it's not. You know, you can follow everything that's in the book, but when you get hormones involved and her growing, it's going to take off the way it's taking off. So you have to ride the wave, and it's very frustrating. But
okay, you mentioned ketoacidosis, because there is a ketogenic diet and getting into ketosis. Explain that there is a serious difference. Ketoacidosis is deadly. Ketosis is not. So define to me in layman's terms, Mom, what is ketoacidosis?
So to someone that is not diabetic, if you pee on a strip and you want to see how acidic that your urine is, if you're at a certain level, it's not going to affect you the same way it would if you are type 1, which is your pancreas is not even functioning. It's not doing anything. So if you have what's called ketones in your urine and you are type 1 diabetic, you are moving into a stage where it could even be coma. It really hurts your organs. It's so different. So one of the things that I was told when we were she was diagnosed, that you're going to have to do some education because people have misconceptions or maybe assumptions. Mm-hmm. And so that is something that I teach people, is that people that are not diabetic, not type 1, and they go on a keto diet, that doesn't work for my child. Now, I'm talking about my child. I'm not talking about every type 1, but that doesn't work. She can eat eggs with cheese.
Yeah.
And give her insulin. Now, I don't know how much I need to give her because we don't know, but she will spike. Even though that has a low carbohydrate level.
Yes.
And that's when the hormones have to take place. The weather outside, if it's hot, if it's really cold, if you're having an argument with your friend at school, I can tell when she is having a day and something's going on because the levels are just, I wait for the conversation in the car. I can tell.
So it, does her app communicate with you as to what she's doing throughout the day?
Yes. So Tristan and I are both on both of her apps. She has one app that shows her blood sugar, and it can show us the trends, whether it's trending a little up, a little down, maybe straight across. And then the other app, we cannot follow what her insulin pump is doing. She can on the device that she has to carry with her in her medical bag, but we don't have access on an app to that. So it's very, very helpful because when her alarms go off, if she's high, if she's low, we can attend to it and treat it. She's really good with her care, though. But at the same time, I mean, she's 11, almost 12. I mean, you want her to be a kid.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
But we want her to get a good solid night's of sleep. So we do her care overnight. We take care of her because she ends up sometimes needing something overnight.
And go back to the origin of type 1 diabetes. It can also be triggered by a virus. Sometimes I'll talk to moms who have kids who have these mysterious autoimmune conditions, and this is one of them. Whereas kind of Hashimoto's and my vitiligo, they're not real mysterious. I just got them. I was in my 30s. I was 40s. So no big deal. But when a child gets this, a lot of times moms can say, oh, she had a blank this amount of time before the bottom fell out. Do you have any of that with her?
She had pneumonia 4 times within 2 years.
Oh my.
Yeah. We've talked about this before. I have Epstein-Barr virus. I am assuming I have probably passed it on to her. I have no idea. I haven't been able to have anybody draw those levels.
Yeah.
So that's another virus in the mix, but I did not know. Both Tristan and I have type 1s in our lineage way.
Oh, isn't that right?
Enough that we just didn't know about it. So there's a lot of different factors that it could have come from.
Most families, we happen to be in a city with a teaching hospital and a good and a very reputable children's hospital. What do people do in small towns? Do they have to go to the big city near them for that type care? Or I mean, because you have to have a pediatric endocrinologist for this type of condition, right?
I honestly think it is different for every family. The experiences that we've come in contact with, there will be people that will travel from different parts of the state to come here for care. And where they live, they'll get the care that they have access to.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We've seen
it. Yeah. It's about accessibility. What was, because you'll hear stories of people and their blood glucose. And just to remind people, just from what I know, the pancreas's job is to release insulin. Insulin's role, besides fat storing, is to usher glucose to the cells. If glucose is not ushered to the cells and glucose rises, that is the danger sign for your organs, your vision, your limbs, you know, all the things that can deteriorate. So that's why, for those of us who are healthy adults, we want to keep our blood glucose between 80 and 120. What was hers the day that you got the number?
Her blood was 5.4 and her urine was over 1,000.
Now, I don't know the...
Let me tell you something.
Yeah.
With puberty, that's not going to stop overnight. It's an evolution that goes on.
Yeah, that's right.
Her blood sugar has been so high before that it's surpassed that before. No fault of hers.
What? So
yes. And we were warned by doctors, hey, we want to let you know you're going to be following care and doing things. And all of a sudden numbers will change. Every type 1 diabetic is different. In her case, in the mornings, she has what's called the dawn phenomenon.
Yes.
As soon as the sun rises, you can't give her enough insulin. She spikes. It doesn't matter if I give her insulin 30 minutes before she eats breakfast to let it kick in or whatever. Her precious body just decides that, you know, it needs to do something differently. So, we really try to work with her and remind her that the things that you're doing, you know, you're doing an amazing job and that there's no shame, there's no guilt, there's no embarrassment. This is the way the domino effect is, unfortunately.
Okay. Well, so those of us in the health space that, especially in the intermittent fasting world, we talk about the dawn phenomenon with our clients who will say, and I went to my provider and looked at my glucose and it was, you know, 9 in the morning for a morning draw. And I'll be darned, they said my glucose was 130 and it's normally 105 in the mornings. And so we've said, well, the dawn phenomenon, and I may have not said this correctly, is the pancreas's last attempt to try to push out glucose to give you a little boost through the day. Well, her pancreas is dead on arrival. So what is pushing out? What pushes out glucose then? Oh, no, she doesn't have the insulin. She has the glucose. So I've said it wrong. Our pancreas pushes out insulin that causes our glucose to respond. She doesn't have any insulin to push out, but her glucose is coming up, right?
Yes. So her glucose rises, like no matter. Her pancreas, her islet cells, they don't make insulin at all.
Right.
Also something, when you're first diagnosed with type 1, there's something called the honeymoon period. I don't like that word because it sounds fun. It is not. So, the honeymoon period for a type 1 diabetic, when you start getting the adequate care that you need, which is insulin, you have to have that, your body now has to start adapting to new care regimen. Now, because you can't go in there and look at the pancreas and be like, oh, this is happening. There's a possibility the pancreas has not completely shut off. So it spits insulin.
Got it.
And eventually, you know, I'm not a doctor, but eventually the pancreas either completely stops or your body starts to adjust and you figure out how much insulin you need. With that said, that also changes every day. That's probably a whole different another podcast on what you need for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. The math is just wild how it changes.
Let's talk about the math. So the math is, are you trying to keep her between 80 and 120? That's probably too ambitious for somebody with type 1 diabetes, right?
Yeah. I mean, if we can keep her in the hundreds, that's great.
Wow.
But there's plenty of times that she rides over 200.
I mean, does she feel bad or does she feel bad on its way back down? Does she feel bad what's going up or what's coming down?
She can tell a difference when it's moving, but a non-type 1 diabetic, the range that you would want to be in, if she rides in that range, sometimes she feels low. Sure, her body sometimes feels more energetic and more normal to her if she rides higher from 150 to 200. And that, I mean, we listen to her too, even though we're trying to follow protocol.
Yeah.
Our doctors want us to do that because she is the only person. She can give us the best data in the world because she can tell us exactly what's going on. So we really try to follow what feels good for her.
I think what you have too is she's been an adult a long time. Part of that is the making of an only child to two very involved parents. Not everyone has that fortunate family dynamic. You know, some other kids, you advocate so well for Riley, both you and Tristan do. So she feels empowered, I think, to be able to tell you this isn't right. You know, but that's just not always the case. So I just want to make a blanket statement that Breezy's situation with her daughter isn't what everybody has. You know, some people have it really rough. But in the fact that she is so mature, when does mom, when she goes to, she just got diagnosed, 8 years ago. In this amount of time, from this time to then, it'll be almost college for her. Can you go room with her at the dorm?
We talk about this all the time, especially Tristan. So one of the things that we have started to implement, because she doesn't hear all of her alerts, her low, her high alert, like in the middle of sleeping, she is out. So it's also important that she starts to have some autonomy. She has some independency, yeah. But how does she physically hear that? So Tristan did some research and he found this machine called a sugar pixel. And it looks like something in my opinion, like in a ball game or something. So it reads her number, but the sounds that come out of it are horrible. It's of every service type of vehicle, yeah. Imagine. And it wakes her up. It connects Bluetooth to her glucose monitor. So we're trying to implement things like that because it is important that she has those times when she can do it by herself. That is going to be awful for us, but that's what she has to do. You know, it's going to be important that sleepovers at some point.
I know.
Probably get tired that goes with her.
Right. When was the last time you had a full night's sleep before you even had her?
Oh, yeah.
Seriously, you're up every night?
So, yes.
Wow.
I don't have great sleep anyways. I'm also very cautious with how I explain this because I know she's going to want to see the podcast too.
Okay.
So,
all right.
We take turns. So like it's his night or my night. We have our alarms set. Now, some people don't set alarms when they have, like she has that glucose monitor on her. We set our alarm. We are just still in that habit. If it's not my night, my body still, I hear the alerts, even if I don't hear it.
Because you're like a mom.
Background, you think you hear it. And for the moment, we are her pancreas, and we're okay with that.
You're doing a great job. I mean, if they need to audition a pancreas on Broadway, I'm sending the two of you. Y'all are amazing.
Thank you. And she's wonderful too. The way that she takes care of herself, but also just her honesty about the condition. You know, as a kid, she would get up in front of the class and explain to somebody what the pancreas does, where it's located.
I love it.
All those questions. And now, you know, if someone asks her, you know, what is that? She'll tell them. I mean, she'll take her insulin when she needs to. So she's doing an amazing job.
She would always have to go to a school that had a nurse in the office.
Yes. Well, the first school that she was at when she was diagnosed, they did not have a nurse on staff. And we taught the staff what to do. It was also pretty close to where we live. So we would be in and out on our lunch breaks and just we would be hands on when we needed to be. You know, if she hangs out with another family, we talk to parents. And I've got a Google spreadsheet of.
Of course you do. Course you do.
It's really my husband, so don't let that throw. I'm not that organized.
Well, you fake it pretty well. Your yoga instructor, what does exercise do to, well, not our pancreas. Well, remember hers doesn't produce the B cells or the islets, right? Or whatever that's called. So does exercise, see, it helps me push my glucose and take it to the cells. Does it do the same to her?
In our opinion, the reason why when she was diagnosed, we think what saved her was the fact that she was so extremely hyperactivity.
Oh.
It's not like sports, but I'm talking like bouncing, cartwheels, trampoline, nonstop movement, very sensory oriented. So yes, if she has a really high moment, even though she's had insulin, she'll go jump on the trampoline and it does help. That doesn't help every time. So it depends on what's going on.
Pretty smart.
It does. There's so many different factors.
Pretty smart.
Yes.
Okay. Well, let's wrap it up. What would you tell other type 1 T1D mom warriors? What's your impassioned plea for them to encourage them?
A few things that were told to me that I didn't really comprehend at the moment is that at diagnosis in that moment, it is a roller coaster. It is unexplainable until you've been in it. A club you don't want to be a part of. But I will tell you that some of the most supportive people I have met coming out of this situation. And then someone once told me, and I didn't believe it, that one day it's going to feel a little bit okay. And you're going to go into more of maintenance and not survival. And I still have a lot of anxiety about a lot of it, but we're at a place now where we feel equipped. She can go have birthday cake when she wants to, you know, be a kid,
do things.
So there's support out there. It's not going to look traditional, but you're going to find your people. And if you can't find your people, you find me. And I'll help you find people because I promise they exist because you need support.
Now you'll get to meet Tanya Mead, mom of two children with type 1 diabetes and a third with another autoimmune condition. Here's Tanya. Okay, now this mom is the second mom with type 1 diabetes kids. And I said kids because it's plural. Tanya Mead, you have two out of your three children have type 1 diabetes. What are the odds? You ought to go buy a lottery ticket.
I know, right?
What are the odds of that happening?
I'm not exactly sure, but after my first son was diagnosed, we were at a wrestling tournament and I saw another child on the floor that had a CGM. So I traced my line of vision to find mom.
That was good.
Who I could talk to about this because he was recently diagnosed. And she told me, Matt had been diagnosed for maybe 6 months. And she said, well, I actually have two children with type 1
diabetes. Is that right?
So I knew that it could happen. And so knowing that anytime one of my other two children, because I have three total, would have an odd day, mm-hmm. I'd be like, okay, let me check your blood sugar. Let's just make sure. And that's how I diagnosed my second child. Because
you diagnosed Allie yourself?
Yes.
Is that right? Tell me about that. So what year was it that your son was diagnosed?
He was diagnosed at 12.
And what year was that? Do you remember?
Gosh, he's 26 now. So
I can't do math.
The math.
Yeah, right. But y'all, everybody do the math. Ago. Okay.
So then Allie was diagnosed 4 years later at the same age, 12. And
is
they
that
say,
right?
Yeah, they say puberty can sometimes trigger it. But yeah, so we were going into the weekend and Allie was carrying around her little water bottle. And I'm like, I am so proud of that little athlete just staying hydrated.
No, she was parched. She was so thirsty.
Exactly. And, but knowing what I knew, I was like, oh, she's filling her water bottle before we run any errands. She's taking it with her. And then she had to, you know, run to the restroom quite a bit while we were running errands that day. And so it was Sunday, and this was Friday that I started noticing this. On Sunday, you know, you always run to the bathroom before you go to church.
Right.
Then we got to church. She had to go again. We were going into the sanctuary. She had to go again. I was like,
is that right?
Yeah. And so we were going up to a float trip right after church, had the car packed, and we had to stop in Searcy. And I said, Allie, you're going to think I'm crazy, but I'm going to take your blood sugar. Because we had a meter. We had everything with us, you know. We're going up to Hardy to float the Spring River.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we pulled into a gas station, and I took her blood sugar, and it was 700.
Did you turn around and go straight to the hospital?
Well, this is where the story gets interesting, because I called endocrinology at Children's, because when you call Children's Hospital and you say, I need to speak with the endocrinologist on call, you don't get a call back from a nurse. You get a call back from the endocrinologist, which is absolutely fantastic. And so our endocrinologist answered the phone, said, hey, what's going on? And I said, well, listen, this is what happened. He said, well, do you have everything you need? I was like, well, I guess we do. We have a glucagon. We have insulin.
Oh, that's true.
She's in DKA. I mean, my child is in DKA. Most kids.
And remind me what DKA is.
It's when your blood sugar is extremely high and you usually have to spend 2 days in ICU getting your blood sugar straightened out again. But that's usually when kids hit the wall and, you know, it's just like your body is so overwhelmed.
Yeah.
But with Allie being very early on, he's like, you know, I think you can handle this. And I'm like, yeah, I can handle it. Because, you know, I'm like, I'm that mom.
You are, Tanya.
Well, I'm just telling you, it seemed like a good idea at the time. And we were so, I don't know. I mean, we were just in shock. We're like, okay, well, this just happened. This is a lifelong disease that now Allie's going to have to deal with. And we got to the cabin. And, you know, we stopped and ate dinner on the way, and she gave herself her first shot of insulin.
So he even told you how to dose it for somebody her height and weight and everything.
Yes.
Yeah, do the math.
So he said, this is the protocol over the next 2 hours, and then check her blood sugars as you go, and then we'll modify if we need to.
Now, I'm gasping, but as an endocrinologist, knowing that this is a familial link, was he at all gasping, or did he just say, hey, it happens?
No, that's exactly what he said. And he said, you got this. But the second part of that story was when we got back from our weekend float trip, we had to go in through the ER at Children's for the diagnosis.
Oh, so, really?
Yes. Otherwise, insurance will not pay for any of your treatment as a diabetic.
Is that right?
So the nurses were like, okay, why are you here? And I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to tell you the real story. But I'm also going to tell you the story for the insurance purposes.
Right.
And that's what we did. And so she had to go in and do her diabetes education for 3 days.
Okay, wait a minute. You wanted to go in then with hyperinsulinemia. Well, high glucose, right. Not high. And I mean, insulin, we don't know. So what was your glucose when she went finally to Children's Hospital to get her real diagnosis? Do you remember?
Well, it was normal. It was like 78.
That's what I figured. Yeah.
Yeah, it was like 78, but they do the blood work. So when you're
that's right. Because that's when we see that the beta cells, you have no beta cells in your pancreas.
Correct.
Because for those of us, and you also, I need to say, you are the queen of fitness in this town. Yet you are such a role model for people, Tanya, with health, because you're also a certified health coach like I am. We both have our certification. I bow at your feet, you know so much. So with that, with what you knew, I mean, you were armed going in there. I'm just trying to think. Were you a health coach at the time, though?
I was. I actually did have my health certification.
Were you scared?
Oh, my gosh. I was so scared because I was in the dry canoe. I mean, you did not want to be around me that day when we were floating, because I was like, I have got the meters, the glucometers.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have got my cell phone if we have an emergency. And then at night, you know, that first night, you know, going into it, I was like, I'm going to rock this. And then at 2 a.m. when I'm laying next to my child, wondering what her blood sugar is and should we really be at Children's right now on IV fluids? You know, it was very scary.
I'm so sorry. When we talked to Breezy too, the cortisol that you moms and dads, anyone who's a caretaker for a child, it could be a grandmother, aunt, I don't know who it is, but I'm saying we go to moms first because that's just what mothers do.
Yes.
The amount of cortisol you put out during that time, I guess now that your kids are grown, I would say it's better, but I bet you still worry at night.
Oh, I worry so much. I do. And especially Allie's at college and she doesn't have a roommate. My son was very fragile because, you know, when you try to keep their blood sugar in a range that it is not causing damage to their body.
Right, to their organs.
Always right there on that cliff of low blood sugars. And the first time he had a seizure, and thank goodness he's only been in DKA twice, where it was an emergent situation
And so is that over about 500 or 600 glucose reading, or what do you think that number is?
I would say it just depends on the kid. It's very bio individual.
Yeah.
Because some kids can vomit one time and end up in the ICU for 3 days. I'm very thankful that my kids were not that way. I mean, Allie just, she made it to 22 before she actually had to have any emergency care.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
So, I thought that was just when you got diagnosed. I didn't know it could still show up anytime.
Yeah. Well, yes, the blood, your blood gases get completely off. And they have to go in and reset everything in your blood, your body chemistry, all of the minerals get off filter. But yes, she actually 2 months ago was the very first time she had to go to the ER with a diabetic related incident. And it was from a 4 day stomach virus. And, you know, she just had blood fluids. Yeah. So when they get
dehydrated. And she's an athlete. Wasn't she a D1 or 2 or 3? Yes. I mean, she was a competitive athlete. What does that do to the pancreas? I guess that's a good thing because it takes, well, my pancreas works. It takes my glucose and pushes it to my insulin and my glucose. That's it. My glucose, it pushes it to the cells. Does it do that for her?
No. So it's such a delicate dance because she has a soccer scholarship at Lyon
College.
That's
what I thought.
She was a cheerleader. She was the kicker for the football team at Baptist Prep. So she's very active. But the thing is, if you were a normal adult that worked out for an hour every day and you ate the same foods and you expended the same amount of energy every day, you would take the same amount of insulin, right?
Right.
Well, so you have to always balance the energy expenditure with your insulin dose. So when it's soccer season and she's exercising 3 hours a day, she has to make sure that she's getting lots more carbs, a lot less insulin. And then
More carbs and less insulin. Okay. I have to think about
that. She's burning that energy.
Yes.
Burning it up.
Sure. The glucose. Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah.
So you know how I eat kind of a meat-based diet, because we've talked about it, and that my body will go into gluconeogenesis to produce my own glucose.
Right.
Could she eat such a low, not as an athlete, but as a type 1 diabetic, could she kind of follow a keto or carnivore lifestyle?
Yes.
She could, right?
To a certain extent, because your body converts, 30% of your protein to glucose. But it'd be very hard as an athlete for her to do that.
Yeah, for as an athlete, she probably couldn't do it. Now, Breezy talked about she and Tristan take nights over who's going to watch, a little bit over there. Well, you don't have it, because she lives by herself in a college, I'm sure they have good nursing care there. But do you have any type of alarm for you that tells you, okay, you have to then, it tattles and says, Allie doesn't. She's not doing right.
So her CGM is linked to my cell phone.
Okay.
And you can add up to 4 people to your CGM.
Oh, really?
So we would get notifications or alarms if she's starting to border. And you can set those boundaries. So I don't want to know if her blood sugar's on the border of going low, because she's got that. But I mean, if it's
why do you know that then? Because it will wake her up?
She's just very intuitive.
Okay.
And she's like her brother, though. He would sleep through it. So we literally had 2 baby monitors when my kids were teenagers. And, so they'd have a sleepover and it'd be midnight. And I'd be like, don't forget to turn your baby monitor on, because I want him to have a healthy, relationship with all of his friends.
Right.
At the same time, if you're going to sleep, I need the baby monitor on, because then it's my watch.
I totally understand, Mom. I totally do. Now, did she have the fruity breath or any of those little symptoms?
Her blood sugar wasn't high enough to have that.
That was pretty high, though.
Yeah, I know. And I think that, again, that's a bio-individual thing.
Yeah.
Because I had read that. I knew that was a thing. But neither of my kids ever really had that. But they did have the frequent urination and just the ridiculous thirst. I mean, just really thirsty.
Yeah, the thirst.
And the weight loss. They both lost about 10 pounds. But it was right when school was starting for both of them. So it was right when sports got back to full-blown practices. And then also just getting back in the swing of things. And so in the growth spurt during that time.
Oh, that's crazy.
Also, So you could say, well, I thought he just lost a few pounds because he's 12.
He'd gotten taller or something.
Yeah.
There's a family in Little Rock, and you may know it. It's the Peoples family. Dr. Peoples is an MD. And when his son was in high school, this was 20 years ago, he was about 6'6" or so. I mean, he's a tall boy. So when he was getting thinner and he was very tired, they just thought, well, he was a senior at Pulaski mm-hmm. Academy. They thought, well, he's just playing a lot of basketball and he's just working out more. Yeah. And the dad's a doctor and the mom's a nurse. And sure enough, he at 17 had type 1 diabetes. Well, then she was keeping her granddaughter, which was the boy's niece, and at 9 months old, put the baby in her face and smelled the breath. Mm-hmm. And the baby at 9 months old had a blood glucose. I swear it was like 800 or 900.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So we do see, that's what I was saying, the familial link. Mm-hmm. In your case, because Breezy, I mean, a lot of moms will say, and dads, a virus triggered it. We remember so-and-so got real sick and then 2 weeks later had these crazy symptoms. Can you have any correlation with your two kids?
I can. My son had a skull fracture and brain bleed.
Girl.
3 months.
You athletes. Don't y'all just want to do something like typing or crochet. Knitting?
Yes. But he had a skull fracture and a brain bleed right at the end of fifth grade. And then this sixth grade was when he was diagnosed, right at the beginning. But Allie, not so much. But I do believe the autoimmune gene is there because my mom had fibromyalgia. Then she was later diagnosed with 7 of the 8 connective tissue disorders.
Is that right?
And celiac. And then, you know, I have 3 kids. 2 have type 1 diabetes. My oldest son was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis, and it was triggered from a gut bacteria that he got in Brazil. So I think the autoimmune link is there. But definitely with Matt, that trauma probably triggered his.
Now, have they had any, I mean, not that I'm inviting them to the party, but have they contracted any other autoimmune diseases?
So far, no.
Okay. No. Well, this is where, I mean, I'm patting us on the back as health coaches. It's made us really conscientious, though, of the choices we make. So when I was first diagnosed with mine 20-something years ago, they were telling me there was no link. They were saying, there's nothing you can do. You'll have all these forever.
Right.
And now I'm like, no, no, no. Now we know about epigenetics, which allows you to turn the gene on and off.
Yes.
So I know you are very cognizant of probably their health and probably remind them. So, and since everybody, I'm sure mine here, me too. I mean, you think I'm quiet about it? I mean, mine don't have type 1, but mine also have Hashimoto's and other things. So I'm always up here saying, hey, kids, do this. So what we know, you and I know, we know that the glyphosate that's sprayed on the crop can trigger autoimmune. So I'm not celiac, but we're all allergic to poison that's on the crop. So, they're still kids to me. I mean, Allie's still a kid for sure in college. What does she do about her diet or things in order to mitigate some other issues?
Thankfully, I think just by osmosis growing up with me, you know, she's very cautious. She's very careful. She really loves putting good food in her body.
Good.
And so that's a great thing. And I'm always saying, okay, well, this is cutting edge here. This is what you need to try. You need to take this supplement because it's good for this, it's good for energy in yourselves. And so it was funny because when Matt was diagnosed at 13 years ago, the dietitian came in at Children's Hospital and she said, okay, buddy, you need to think about maybe eliminating fast food and cutting out soda because that's going to make things easier. And Matt's like, I don't get to have fast food or soda. And she looked at me like I had 2 heads and she's like, how did you do that? How do you do that? And I said, well, it's really easy. He can't drive and he doesn't have a job.
Right.
So it's like,
right. We had no problem with that. Just a funny aside, when my kids were growing up, we had a big picture window where the dining room table was. And plus, they were nerdy homeschoolers, so they really blame all their problems on me. But they would see the neighbor because she worked full time. So she picked up food every night and brought it in. So you'd see Outback, you would see so-and-so. And I remember my daughters going, well, that is the life. And I'd go, you have home-cooked pot roast. Exactly. And carrots and potato, but you know, a prophet's without honor in his own hometown. So yes, sometimes they don't appreciate it, but it's hard. You know, mine now, I don't police them. I don't care, but I know mine did go to college going, I'm going to Sonic when I want.
Oh my gosh. The pizza boxes were rampant in my son's car when he was finally able to drive. It was just like,
that's
oh,
hilarious. That's hilarious. Now, for you and I, we look at like our A1C, they do on type ones, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And,
yeah.
And because that's a 3-month look back at what your glucose correct has done along with average glucose. So what do we want a type ones? I want yours and mine to be at 5 or 4.9 correct or 5.1. What about her, the two of them?
Western medicine suggests 7 is good. I don't align with that. I want theirs closer to mine. I want them to be normal. I want them to have good control so they don't have all of the side effects of high right blood sugar.
Oh, the years of damage to the yes organs. And that's what you and I know because we're working out with people and we're giving not medical advice, we're giving health advice.
Correct.
But part of that is the people that I see now, because at my age, I'm older than you by about 100 years. my peers will say, yeah, I this is what they all tell me. I don't have diabetes. And yet they can't. And I say this to describe what I'm talking about. They can't fit in the chair, which is a symptom that you probably have type 2 diabetes, not type correct 1. And I just think, I'm so sorry they hadn't been diagnosed, because that's years of organ abuse that deteriorates mm-hmm and vision and yep limbs and all because somebody said, no, I'm fine. And so your kids are ahead of the curve. Right. And that they've been able to keep a leash on it to say, I don't want the spikes and I don't want the dips.
Exactly. And I made them very aware. I mean, to the point where they were just sick of it. Like, this is why we don't want this to happen. This yeah is why we're keeping your blood sugar in control. I don't want you to be blind someday. I don't right want you to have neuropathy.
Because I love you.
Yes. I don't want you right to have heart disease.
Right.
And so, and I think because, you know, and you know, I was a foster parent for a long time.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And having
a couple, you needed more stress, but go ahead. Right?
But having a couple of diabetic foster kids, their parents did not manage their diabetes appropriately. And it was so sad to me because you think about the young kids that they're yeah they're running really high blood sugars yeah all the time. Uh-huh. And because of that, at Children's, the endocrinologist would be like, uh-huh, and it would offend my kids because they're like, why are they getting on me like that? You yeah know, why do they need to talk to me about that? And I'm like, because not everyone has a situation that you have.
Not everyone has Sergeant Meade
exactly
barking orders.
Exactly. But it, like I said, it worked because it gave them a very strong foundation to build on, and it stuck with them. So
now, do you wear a CGM?
I do not, but I do have a blood sugar meter because, you know, doing fasting, trying to yeah figure out what breaks my fast. And I think yeah it's just a great tool to know too how your body reacts to different foods.
Dr. Annette Bosworth, Dr. Bos, I've had her on my podcast. She just sent me the Keto Mojo yesterday.
Oh,
and
nice
that's the blood glucose and ketone strips and yeah everything. Just check. So I was, my friend and I who are working out, Katie and I are working out at the athletic club now, several days a week. And so I was going to get a CGM, but I'm going to do that for a minute just to see if I'm getting into ketosis. And then mm-hmm I just think it's good. I've interviewed several experts on it for those of us just in the health space. Well, those mm-hmm of us who are older today than we were yesterday, which is everybody. To get a CGM for 2 weeks, ask your provider.
Yeah.
You get the Freestyle Libre and it's $75. Your insurance doesn't cover it. But just mm-hmm do it one time this year. It will tell you more about what the scale says and what if your pants are tight and why you have foggy brain and why you get tired after a meal than exactly anything a doctor or lab work can tell you because it's immediate.
Right.
The one thing I wait for, and we're gonna have to wrap this up, is when we start instead of immediate blood glucose, if they can tell us what our fasting insulin is at all times, because I really feel like fasting insulin is the holy grail mm-hmm and kind of the smoking gun as absolutely to what's going on with our health.
I totally agree with you. You know, taking your blood sugar when you wake up immediately and seeing what that number is 2 hours yep after you wake up.
Yeah.
It's so important.
Yeah. And then really insulin's what triggers the glucose. So I want to know what that was. Have you tested your fasting insulin? Your fasting insulin, not glucose, but.
No, I haven't.
I'd love to hear, because someone as fit as you are, because you're slim and all that, but you are a great weightlifter. And we know that takes the glucose, you know, and pushes it to the cells, right, and helps us. And those of us who do longer fasts do have pretty low. In fact, mine gets so low, it flags it thinking maybe my islet cells aren't working. And my provider just says, one time I was in the middle of a 5-day fast, and on day 4, my fasting insulin was like 1.1, and it flagged it. And she just said, no, you're in the middle of a 5-day fast. That your insulin is there. It's, you're very insulin sensitive right now. So, which is where we want to be. So,
right. Exactly.
It's just the human body is fascinating. What advice or how can you cheer a mom on who just got the words, your child has type 1 diabetes?
Just be thankful it's today and not 50 years ago, because there's so many tools. There's so many tools to help you keep your child as healthy as they can be. You know, it is not curable yet, but it could be soon. And it's one of those that, I mean, it's on the horizon. You know, they're just making great strides every day. And just hang in there, you know, just it's a season. They grow up and they get married eventually, and then you let their spouse
deal with it. I feel that way, and mine don't have diabetes. You can have them. Well, Tanya, thank you for doing this. Great job today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Lisa Fisher Said podcast. If you would, leave a review and follow the show. This podcast is produced by ClantonCreative.com.